Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello, and welcome to Alaska Edition from Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Ellen Lockyer. This winter's unusually warm weather in most parts of the state indicates that spring is not too far away, so a lot of us are already planning our gardens for the year. In Anchorage this week, the University of Alaska's annual Sustainable Agriculture Conference brought together farmers, livestock producers, and wholesale buyers for all kinds of products that can be grown or raised on Alaska soil. And our state's capable of producing quite a cornucopia of fresh vegetables and fruits and flowers, even grains. On today's Alaska Edition, we'll take a look at some of the innovations in agriculture that have taken place in Alaska over the past few years. And we'll hear about taking advantage of local food resources and about food security in the event of a natural disaster. But first, let's introduce our guests. Amy Pettit is Executive Director of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Ellen.
Thanks for being with us. Liz Snyder is a UAA faculty member and co-chair of the state's Food Policy Council. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Ellen.
Thank you for coming in today. And Arthur Keyes is the newly appointed Director of the State Division of Agriculture. Hello, Arthur.
Hi, Ellen.
Good. Well, let's get down to business. It's been a busy week for those involved in agriculture. And since times are really changing fast here, and one of the things that is changing is what we eat and how we eat. I think the public is paying far more attention to where their food comes than they did a decade ago. And the state is increasingly concerned about food systems and what would happen in the event of a disaster, a natural disaster or any other kind. So, Liz Snyder, let's start with you.
Sure.
What does the Food Policy Council do?
Well, the mission is easy to say, but achieving that mission, that's a whole nother story. We have our work cut out for us. But basically, we are here to strengthen Alaska's food system to the benefit of every Alaskan.
Mm-hmm. So when you say food system,
sure.
What exactly is that? Is that from the ground to the consumer? Or?
You got it. I mean, I think what most folks are familiar hearing is from farm to table, for example, but that also includes sea to table or tundra to table, depending on where your food is coming from. But one aspect that doesn't always get highlighted is also what happens to the food after you're finished with what's on your plate and what you do with that waste. That's also an important part of the food system.
So we're taking a new look at waste, too.
Absolutely.
And that's something we can talk about. Well, the Food Policy Council is having a two-day conference starting
yes.
today and all day tomorrow right here at UAA. And what kind of topics are they looking at?
Sure. Well, we've got four different sessions going on, and they're somewhat guided by the different components of the food system, or you can think of it as the components of food security, whether you're talking about food availability, so production, distribution, transportation, or whether it's food access, where it ends up in a grocery store, who can get to it, what the cost of that food is, mm-hmm. or food utilization, whether it's safe food, culturally appropriate food, food that folks want. And we have sessions covering that whole range of topics.
Well, you know, one of the presenters at the Sustainable Agriculture mm-hmm. Conference, which wrapped up on Thursday, traced the cost of a head of lettuce from mm-hmm. the California grower, where it would cost 48 cents a head, all the way to Dillingham, where it costs $5.99 a head,
mm-hmm.
and indicated that a good bit of that cost was the transportation routes.
Sure.
And so that's something that needs another new look. So Amy Pettit, you have just come from the Sustainable Agriculture Conference and wrapped up that yesterday. How is the conference different from the Food Policy Council's?
Yeah, I would say they do have some crossover. I'm seeing some of the same people in the audience and even as speakers. But Sustainable Ag, it's Sustainable Ag Research and Education Conference, has been going on for over a decade. And it's really focused on farmers, on producers, on and really more on small farmers. And then Food Policy Council, I would say, and Liz might agree with me on this one, that we're really trying to reach more on the consumer side, more of the foodies and the people that are trying to access the food. But there is definitely crossover between the two conferences.
Right. So you're more focused on the producers, the growing end. And there were some things that blew my mind that have not been heard of in the past decade. There was hoop houses and Arctic gardening, and the fellow who had the vertical grow units for hydroponic gardening that could be potentially dragged out to villages on Western Alaska. There was all kinds of things. I talked to a woman who had the only fiber mill in Alaska, which is a total innovation, and she did it all herself. Yeah. So can you comment, Amy, on how is agriculture changing in this state?
You know, I think it's a really great time in the agriculture industry in Alaska. I think there is so much momentum. There's a lot of positive movement. And as you mentioned in the intro, people are interested in where their food comes from. And Alaskans are interested in providing that food for their neighbors. And so it's changing. But, you know, at SARE, we also heard from two growers that have been in the industry for, you know, Ben Vanderweel has been in the industry for over 40 years. And Pam Bew, I think, another 40 years. So it's changing and it's growing in different ways, but there's still a lot of great things that have been going on, you know, for decades that just continue to, you know, keep getting those potatoes and carrots into the grocery store.
So. Right, and the innovations are astonishing too, like rhodiola, whatever that is. They're growing it now. Art Keys, let's bring you in. And you have been farming for years, but using a very small amount of acreage. And you were very instrumental in getting some of these local farmers markets going in Anchorage and into the valley. Tell us about your background a little bit.
Yeah, certainly. You know, I grew up in Anchorage, and from a young age, I started working in the retail side of produce sales, and I had the opportunity in 2003 to start farming in the Matanuska Valley, and I found I really enjoyed it. So, so I started doing that, and my farm just about doubled in size almost every single year early on. And in 2006, I started the South Anchorage Farmers Market. At the time when I started that, there was only 6 farmers markets in Alaska, and I think today we're over 40. So phenomenal amount of growth in the past 10 years, and a tremendous amount of opportunity for young people like I was. I think I'm maybe not quite as young as I used to be.
Well, I would say that traditionally we think of potatoes, carrots, onions, cabbage as Alaska crops. But if you go to the farmers markets, as I do and many of us do, your eyes are open. There's
Absolutely.
All kind of stuff there. Ben Vanderweel, who Amy mentioned, has been a producer for decades, was talking at the University of Alaska Agriculture Conference, and he said you can grow almost anything, you know, if you put your mind to it. He pointed out he was growing some wheat, you know. So, and he went through this whole laundry list of stuff, and I'm thinking, wow, these are items that were at one time considered for gourmet use only.
Right.
But now those kinds of items are coming into the public mainstream. And I think part of that is the farmers are hearing from the buyers at the local farmers markets, do you have this? Can you get me this kind of thing? And,
right.
and going out
mm-hmm.
and trying. You
Absolutely.
Tried strawberries and onions. Tell us about your onion and strawberry experiments and how they worked out.
Certainly. You know, for me, and I think a lot of farmers are the same mindset that I am, when you challenge us to say, hey, you can't do that or that can't be done, and we kind of have an idea that maybe we could pull it off, I think it's just baiting these people that have a strong will and have got this work ethic to go after it. And the strawberries, what I ended up growing is a California variety. It's as big as any strawberry you've ever bought in the grocery store, and it's probably about 3 or 4 times sweeter than what you've bought in the grocery store. And it's an item that there will never be enough of in Alaska. We'll always be able to sell everything we produce.
Right. And I have to say, personally, I did pick some of your strawberries one summer, and they were about as big as my fist and very sweet and not beyond compare. Some of you get these strawberries in January in the markets, but they have no flavor and they're hollow inside. They look big, but when you bite into them, there's nothing inside.
Yep.
So how does this trend, the popularity of farmers markets, you told me, Arthur, that There was six, and now there's 40. Yeah. How is that helping the small farmers? Can a farmer make a living off running a small stand, a farmer's market stand?
Certainly. I think it's opened the eyes to a lot of people of the opportunity that's there. Mm-hmm. Over the years, the conversations I've had, my retail experience, I would tell people that you could walk into a grocery store, and if you see an item for sale there and you could grow it, there's potential to make a living at that item. And this farmer's markets really are the fastest conduit to that. When you cut that middleman out and that farmer can get full retail for his product, the reward is it's instantaneous and it's a tremendous opportunity.
Wow, because is there a new direction we can go? We've sort of done the locally produced traditional vegetables and Right. Now expanded into various different types of vegetables and products. I shouldn't say vegetables. There's birch syrup. There's Right. Kiviut. Yeah. There's just any number of candies and syrups and combinations of this stuff. Is there another step that's trending in your mind? Is there another jump that the locally produced farm stands are going to go through? Because it used to be three or four things, and now you go, and it's like the choices are amazing.
I think with Alaska's unique situation, it's really like we're at the end of the street. We're in a cul-de-sac, if you will. You know, things come here, they don't pass through here. You know, the food, our transportation, our shipping. This is a destination, not just another stop on the route. So that being said, anything that we can produce, the demand is already there. I mean, it's being brought in. And so I think the trend that we're seeing of these growths in farmers markets and these small family farm producers that are starting to earn their families' income from these farmers market outlets, I think that's going to keep growing. I think the opportunity, we haven't even come close to filling it.
You know, I was in the Chicago airport one time a couple of years ago, stuck there overnight. And there was within the airport, there was a farm stand, and it was it was in mid-January, and there was the advertising said it was rooftop gardens.
Wow. Yeah.
The produce and the products that they were selling in an urban setting were from urban rooftop gardens. That blew my mind. I thought, wow, that's an innovation.
Another great thing that's happening, Amy, is the value-added products. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we have an all Alaska-grown wine available now down on the Kenai Peninsula, right? And we have a salt company in Alaska now too, yeah. Right? Down in Sitka. Yeah. And, you know, we've got these, I think that's the next jump, is these innovative businesses that are taking Alaskan products to the next level, making them shelf-stable and available to our tourists, et cetera.
Right. Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, just to build off of both of that, if the question is the bottom line, we spend about $1.5 billion on food that we import into the state. That's $1.5 billion we could keep in the state.
In the state. Right.
Yeah, that's a huge opportunity.
Well, that segues right into, how does marketing help? I see, Arthur, you are wearing
yeah, certainly,
a logo.
Certainly. You know what? Now that I'm, well, even before I was a director, I was a huge promoter of Alaska Grown. It's been a mainstay of all my marketing and at the farmer level, farmer's market level, huge supporter of it. Now that I'm the director of agriculture, this is a state-owned logo, and every day is Alaskan Grown Day to me now. And so Ellen, I brought you a couple of our marketing materials,
yeah, sure.
And you may have seen these. You may have seen these on bumpers throughout the state, but these are our current Alaska Grown logoed bumper stickers.
Right.
So I brought these for you.
Let me see the little camera shot of these. We can see them. Here's the I Love Alaska Grown, and here is the Closer, Fresher, Better.
That's right.
Fresher by far. It's not been trucked from California to Dillingham at the price of $5.99 a head of lettuce.
That's right.
Amazing. And you have the chips there. Let's see.
I do. And, you know, the Alaska Grown chips, value-added item, to really expand on what Liz and Amy have both said. A great product, made in Anchorage, grown in the Matanuska Valley, and processed and made in Anchorage. And I, you know, to segue the division's contribution to these potato chips is I have a pre-nuclear plantlet that these potatoes came from, And this is a division of agriculture activity that we do at the Plant Material Center. Mm-hmm. And this is in support of Alaska's potato industry. And it sounds kind of funny, but this is a pre-nuclear plant that mm-hmm. the division or the PMC creates. They grow it in an inert material. It's been sterilized. There's no disease. Alaska, we are a disease-free place. It's known for how clean our soil and environment is. And this is what the division is doing to support this industry in the state of Alaska and make sure that we have fresh food to eat for generations to come.
Right. I did tour that Plant Materials Center one time, and it was amazing. The potato, the varieties of potatoes in test tubes, just these tiny amoeba, I don't know.
This is it.
To ensure that they're disease-free, and they provide disease-free potato spuds for planters. So let's move and talk a little bit about the challenges that are facing farmers in our state. And Amy, one of them is land.
Sure.
So, and you are with the Alaska Farmland Trust. What does your organization do?
Yeah, so Alaska Farmland Trust exists to protect Alaska farmland, and we do that through conservation easements, which are kind of a difficult concept to understand, so I won't go into the details, but what we're doing is saving the soil. We are working with willing landowners who want their land to stay in agricultural production in perpetuity forever, and that's actually what we do with our conservation easements. And you know, I think access to land can be considered a challenge for producers, but there's so many opportunities. And one of the things we're working at Farmland Trust is a connection. It's called FarmLink. And basically the whole idea is that people that are looking for land will fill out their database information and it will come to me. And people that want to rent, lease, or sell their land in agriculture production will also fill out their database information and will link people up. And we're really looking forward to launching that this year and seeing how many more connections we can make.
What kind of typical questions do you get? I've been told, and I don't know, I'm no expert, but that the fastest growing segment of farmers are small farmers and pretty much women.
Do you
see that?
There are definitely more women faces in the audience at our conferences, et cetera. Actually, coming up in March, there's a Women in Ag conference that's being held down in the lower 48, but being telecast up here in Alaska just for women, a whole day about ag just for women. So that is exciting.
I'd like to get their fingers in the soil.
Yeah.
And Liz, I was speaking to a farmer just a couple of days ago this week, and he was saying that infrastructure is a big problem.
Sure.
It's a need. Can you address that a little bit?
Sure, and I'm sure you two will have plenty to add to that. But that's something that we hear a lot. AFPC in the past years have held town halls, and we've recently commissioned a report on the Alaska food system to help us prioritize what we need to focus on. And if you look at the list of recommendations from that report available through our website, infrastructure is right at the top of that list, whether it's storage facilities, whether it's processing facilities, whether it's optimizing the transportation routes, many of which were initially developed for resource extraction, but optimizing them for our farmers.
That's a good point, and I wanted to move over to Arthur here. What can the Division of Ag do? You're new in the job now. Do you have innovative ideas? You've been a farmer all this time. You understand these challenges. What would you say about infrastructure and maybe some things we might want to be doing to change?
Well, I consider there's plenty of opportunities. Now, I haven't been in this job too long, so I'm a little hesitant to jump into too many specifics. Right now, the Division of Ag is doing a lot to support agriculture. It's not very high profile. It's not the cutest thing on the block, so maybe we don't see it and talk about it every day. I mentioned the plantlet. There's an entire potato industry that's counting on this. Everybody in Alaska that's consumed an Alaskan potato should be concerned with this. And I also brought another example. This is certified Alaskan seed.
Mm-hmm.
And this is produced at the PMC, the Plant Material Center, which is run by the Division of Agriculture. And this is in support of, you know, whenever they put a new road in and it needs to be revegetated, they've got to use certified seed. What we don't want to do in Alaska is contaminate Alaska with some invasive weeds that are going to cause problems farther down the line for our farmers and our wildlife and the habitats that they're counting on.
Right, that's a whole other thing. Invasive plants, invasive weeds. I know the Soil and Water Conservation has a whole program where they get people, volunteers, to go out and pull bird vetch and whatever. There's a lot of them now, and they come up often in imported plants, right. non-indigenous plants mm-hmm. and trees. I know that's where we got the birch miner from years ago that devastated a couple of trees in my backyard. So that is a program the public might want to get behind and get more interested in, you know, maybe holding off from buying that stuff from the big box stores and going to the local greenhouses and, you know, for a native plant that will thrive with a whole lot less attention.
and I think one of the roles that the division can play, at least that I'm looking at very closely, is the marketing. I brought you those stickers and I'm wearing this shirt. But I think we have some marketing opportunities to mm-hmm. educate the consumers about the things we're doing, the things that we can do, the things that they can do. Where are you buying your plants at? Are you buying them at a big box store where potentially there's a you know, invasive species, a pest or disease that's not in Alaska that could be brought in? I think those are things we can look at. And then, you know, making sure that people understand that when they're supporting a Alaskan company that's, you know, making potatoes, potato chips, carrots, that the value that brings to our economy is it's priceless.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that in a lot of the big box stores are still supporters of Alaska Grown, so you just got to look for the logo, right? Because although
Certainly.
They're carrying stuff yep. from outside, a lot of them are buying from our local greenhouse and nursery industry, so just look for that logo.
And yep. ask for it if you don't see it. Just yep. go to the manager and say, where's the Alaska Grown carrots? I wanted to, before we get off Alaska Grown a bit, I wanted to talk about the soil and why are Alaska vegetables sweeter? Art, you would be the one to address that.
Yeah, you know, I've been preaching that for a long time. You know, the carrots are the best example. You know, the governor and I, we've talked extensively about that. It's the soil, you know, we do have some very clean, beautiful, pristine mm-hmm. soils. A lot of it, though, is going to fall down to the latitude of where we're at on the globe, the actual science behind that. When you have these long, lengthy days that we have in the summertime, these root crops especially, and the fruits too, they're developing carbohydrates. And that's not necessarily what we want to eat. It's warm. But then we get the cool nights that come in, and they don't have that in California, this cool night temps that come in. And all those carbs that have been developing all day, those convert to sugars all night. And that's something that's not happening in California, for example. And that's why we end up with a carrot that's 8 times sweeter, or a strawberry that quite frankly, once you've had an Alaskan strawberry, you don't go back.
Right.
There's no point. Alaskan peas, that's another good example. Alaskan peas are epic. They're legendary, and it comes down to the sugars, and it comes down to that latitude where we're at in the globe. There's a lot of science behind this.
And one of the studies long ago indicated that the Mat Valley does need a production facility to package those peas, freeze them up for mass production.
Right.
To ship outside of the state, it's sort of a reverse of the California lettuce coming up here, but there's just not enough people in the state to produce, to support a whole industry of that nature. Is that true, or is that changing?
So, you know, is it true or not? I can give you my opinion on it. My opinion is it comes down to marketing and supply and demand. If we can market in a way that creates a demand, I believe in the free market that we live in here. I believe that someone will step up and meet that demand. I think the state's opportunity with this logo and the marketing department at the division is to educate people so that demand is there and so that the free market can step in and fill it.
Right.
I think a lot of Alaskan producers are focused on feeding Alaskans, right?
That's
and
true.
I think
right.
one thing that we work on a lot at the Food Policy Council, I'm on the governing board with Liz, is we have a lot of hungry Alaskans, and we have a lot right. of Alaskans to feed first. I love the idea of shipping our carrots outside just to make those people in the lower 48 jealous of what we've got. But I think that we need, you know,
to keep them.
Yeah, we've got to figure out our system in Alaska better, too, and feed more Alaskans.
Right. And I wanted to bring Liz on this, too. First of all, the sort of eat local movement started fairly small, and I think mm-hmm. it was more among people who were of the gourmet variety. But over the years, it's grown and grown and grown, and it's right. sort of become, it's on fire now. Everyone's yeah. doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is advertising, and part of that is because it's here and it tastes so darn good. Yeah. So first there's a fad, then there's a trend, and then there is an industry, as I've been told. Right. Liz, can you address right. that? How do we get the industry going so that everyone can eat local
sure.
and it's no longer oh, but it's far more expensive to buy, you know, organic produce than it is to buy, you know, produce shipped in. That sure. equation has to change.
I think the big key is bringing people closer to their food. It's one thing when you go into the supermarket and you don't know where your piece of produce came from or a processed item came from. But if you have the opportunity to sit next to a farmer, and I visited your farm once.
Oh, you did?
There's
right.
no reason for you to remember, but I had one of your strawberries.
You did, right?
They were fantastic.
Yeah.
And
right.
making that connection, it doesn't even cross my mind now when I go into the grocery store. That's my priority. That said, if we want more folks to buy it and we want to address our hunger needs in the state, we do have a food insecurity rate of around 15-16%. That's about on par with the national average. The more food that we have in production, we may be able to see prices lower. But if we can still support programs, say at farmers markets, where we can accept SNAP and WIC benefits, for example, that's another great avenue to get more local foods into Alaska homes.
And just people being aware, and I wanted to touch on livestock real quick, and we're practically out of time. So is the slaughterhouse an issue? Has that been settled yet? Is they going to close it, or are they going to keep it going?
I don't think it's going to close. I think this new group of guys wanting to privatize it are on the move.
Okay, we're running out of time. Thank you, Amy Pettit, Liz Snyder, Arthur Keyes. I'm Ellen Lockyer, and thanks for tuning in to Alaska Edition this week. We will be back next week with another topic of public concern. Thanks for watching.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.